Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, the government is set to purchase 150,000 courses of the antiviral COVID-19 oral drug called Molnupiravir. According to the manufacturer Merck, the pill is said to be able to reduce by 50% the chance of individuals at risk of severe illness from being hospitalized due to COVID-19. Now, is this new COVID-19 pill really the global game changer in the fight against the pandemic as it started to be? Dr. Vinod Balasubramaniam is a senior lecturer and lead of the Infection and Immunity Research Strength at the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences of Monash University, Malaysia. He joins us now. Vinod, this drug, this Molnupiravir drug, is this antiviral pill the game changer that everyone touts it to be? What do you think?
Thank you very much, Melissa. Thank you, Sharad, for having me again. I'm pretty excited. Okay. Now, let me reiterate this first. Vaccination remains our ultimate shield for the fight against COVID-19, right? Let me reiterate that. Now, having said that, it's always good, it's always safe to have an extra weapon in our arsenal, right? To fight COVID-19, right? Now, what is Molnupiravir? Right, it's named after the Thor's hammer Mjolnir. Yeah, it's just a fun fact. Yeah, it's an investigational, right? It's orally administered, a form of a potent ribonucleoside analog. Right. So, what are ribonucleoside analogs? Those are nitrogen bases in our RNA. Right. What it does? It inhibits the replication of SARS-CoV-2, the causative agent of COVID-19. Right. It's been shown to be really potent, active in several preclinical models of SARS-CoV-2, including for prophylaxis, treatment, prevention of transmission. That's very important, prevention of transmission, okay? Additionally, you can look at preclinical and clinical data, right? Has shown that this drug to be active against most common SARS-CoV-2 variants, right? You're talking about Mu, Delta, and also Beta and Alpha, right? Now, how does it work, right? It mimics the previously approved drug, Remdesivir. Right now, we know that the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes COVID-19, makes copies of itself by encoding instructions on RNA. Right, it is made out of bases, like I said before, molecules identified by the letter A, C, U, and G. Right now, Remdesivir imitates A, which is adenosine, right, while Molnupiravir imitates U, which is uracil, or C, which is cytosine. Right, this is very, very crucial. Now, what happens? So, when the virus incorporates Remdesivir into its RNA, this is an example, right? The drug causes its reproductive cycle to stop, similar with Molnupiravir, right? Molnupiravir causes error in the viral replicative cycle. Because of that, the viral replication cycle is stalled. It is not active. It cannot infect neighboring cells. It cannot transmit itself, right? We stop transmission, right? So basically, what this drug does is that it fools the virus, but they don't fool the human cell, right? So they have a targeted effect and most part leave the human cells alone. So it's safe.
Vinod, can I just take you up on that? Because you've put a lot of information before us and I was trying to assimilate all of it. You mentioned this drug, Remdesivir, and we've heard about it for a year now. What distinguishes Remdesivir from this new drug? I mean, what are the added advantages? Why wasn't Remdesivir the game changer? And why, and now this drug, the game changer?
So initially, Remdesivir was approved, right? It is also orally taken. It is really, really efficient against Ebola, right? It was initially designed for Ebola, right? And we know that, scientists are, racing to find off-the-shelf medications, right? These are known as drug repurposing. Why? The ease of use, right? Number one, the ease of use. Compared to other therapies like monoclonal antibodies, blood transfusions, right? Drugs which is in the form of pills, right? Are much, much easier to be given, to be transported, and to reach, difficult to reach communities, right? So So it provides a good alternative. Now, how does it differ? Mechanism, right? Remdesivir imitates A, adenosine, right? Molnupiravir imitates C or U, right? So it has, variation, right? It has variety of mechanism to fool the virus.
Okay, so you're telling us how it works, and I'm just wondering about efficacy. Can you help us put into context when Merck says that it reduces by half the chance of high risk individuals from being hospitalized due to COVID? Put that into context from the other drugs and the other therapeutics that we know that are currently available to us.
Sure. So we know that the Merck drug, right, the molnupiravir, reduces the risk of hospitalizations or death by 50%, right? This drug is different because it is given at early infection, although some say that it is also given at category 3, category 4, category 5, right? We also have other up-and-coming drugs, right, and monoclonal antibodies, which are given before you get infected. So what happens is that this monoclonal antibodies lingers around your blood circulatory system almost up to a year, right? Provide protection, right? We have various, we're looking at various companies, right? We have Regeneron, which shows that 72% protection against symptomatic infection, right? We also have GSK's monoclonal antibodies, which have shown 79% in reduction. Yeah? So it's comparative. So all of them are racing for approval. All of them are racing for approval. All of them also are waiting to publish their results in peer-reviewed articles. So I think it's a good development. Right?
So Vin, let's talk about that. You know, there are competitors, and we saw this in some ways, this wonderful situation of competition between different pharmaceutical companies, not just in terms of, you know, producing a vaccine, but producing different types of vaccines. And so, you know, the whole world has had a lesson in the various ways in which vaccines can possibly work, right? When we look at, say, the Pfizer candidate, which is another drug, you know, oral drug that will help retard the replication of the virus once it's entered the body, do we see a difference in methodology? Are we looking at different types of drugs with different methodologies, or are they all the same?
Absolutely. So we're looking at drugs working differently, mechanisms, right? In terms of binding with the virus, target which part of the virus is targeting, right? So we're looking at different methodologies, different ways of creation, right? Some of them are analogs, some of them are antibodies, which mimics viral replicative cycles. Some of it retards viral growth, it binds with the viral proteins. So different way of its action, right? The good news is that majority of it gives really good protection, looking at somewhere above 50% to 80%. So, you know, like I said before, it's always good to have variety of weapons in our arsenal against COVID-19. Okay. And I think by looking at recent developments, I know it's really good. It gives a feel good, feeling to everyone, because we are finally looking at light at the end of the tunnel. Now we're looking at holistic approach with vaccination, of course. So which means we can save more lives. Yeah, sorry, please.
Okay, so I want to ask you, there's something else that you mentioned, Vinod, just now, which was when you use this drug, because as I understand it, I'm a layman here, kind of just reading around, it suggests that this is about the replication of the virus. But the disease itself, especially stage 3, 4, and 5, and you mentioned this earlier, is really about the body's overreaction to the infection, that what's happening in a person beyond stage 3 is really not about the virus anymore. It's really about the body. And so you have a host of other drug or therapies that are used in order to stop the body from overreacting. How does this particular drug, molnupiravir, function if that is the fact? And correct me if I'm wrong about my sense of what the disease as opposed to the virus is.
Thank you so much for this brilliant question, Sharad. So now, usually what happens is that, right? So we have a healthy human being, right? A pathogen enters our body, right? Usually, if this pathogen is previously recognized, we have storage of memory B cells, cytotoxic T cells to encounter this pathogen. If it was previously encountered before, right? So this is how our immune system works. But under special circumstances, you have a new pathogen, a new kind of pathogen, which we have never encountered before, SARS-CoV-2 being one, meaning that our immune system is naive. It does not know, it does not recognize this pathogen. So most of the time, viruses use new viruses, novel viruses, right? Like the pandemic causing viruses, trigger various immune responses. So our body don't know how much to. Basically, it's like using a machine gun, right? I just want to eliminate this. This is what happens most of the time. This is what pandemic-causing viruses do, right? It triggers a severe form of immune reaction, right? Like what we see in the SARS-CoV-2, which triggers a hyper-inflammatory system response from our body, which in turn causes, you know, a lot of other anomalies like organ failure, so on and so forth, right? Now, what is beautiful about these drugs is that they do not stimulate our immune response. They do not interfere with our immune response. What it does is that it targets the virus per se, viral proteins per se, especially molnupiravir, right? It causes mutations in the virus, causing the virus replication defective. It can't replicate. It can't infect a new cell. Basically, it enters the cells, you know, molnupiravir comes in action, it's stalled, giving us time, giving our immune system time to clear the virus. So, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Dr. Vinod, there's a lot that you've presented to us, and sure. I think what we'll do, we'll take a quick break, but let's come back, and I want to come discuss some of the concerns around this drug, molnupiravir. So let's take a quick break and come back. Stay tuned to Consider This. Sure. Thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation about the antiviral pill molnupiravir with virologist Dr. Vinod Balasubramanian from the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences of Monash University, Malaysia. I want to come back to, you know, I hear your excitement and it's infectious that we're in the queue now to purchase this drug. But I'm just wondering about some of the concerns that have been raised. You know, there are quarters that have raised concerns that data from the trial has not yet been peer reviewed, it's not yet been published. Mm-hmm. Is that a concern for you?
In a way, I understand the concerns, right? Because we have not seen fully published phase 3 clinical trial data, unlike the vaccines. And we have not seen the reactogenicity profile. And what we have is currently Merck's press release, right? Which is not of a scientific value in a sense, right? It's not peer reviewed, it's not seen by other scientists, right? But what interesting is that we know that the drug reduces the risk of hospitalizations or death by 50%, right? Now, what is interesting that is that we have this board, which is known as Data Safety and Monitoring Board in the US, extremely stringent, just like the FDA. So what they do is that they are not involved in the trial, right? They're not involved in any trials for that matter. What they do is that they review updated data regularly by these drug manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies, right? And they do not, they have no idea of the experiment setup. They just review the data. And what they found is that they were so excited with the results, right? With the results that, and they saw a strong enough difference that they stopped the trials, phase 3 trials before its completion. Now, this is unheard of. This is unheard of. So initially we had around 1,850 participants in the clinical phase 3 trials. So while there were 775, you know, half of it, right? Randomized they stopped the clinical trials after seeing the results, right? Of which they saw that 385 out of the 775 received the drug and saw their hospitalization and death rate to reduce from 14.1% to 7.3%. And they say that, okay, we've seen enough. Please ask for emergency approval. So that rarely happens.
Okay, yeah. So Vinod, there are probably discussions happening within the field of clinical research and by experts like yourself of a sort that perhaps, you know, us laymen can't get into. Is 50% really that good, especially when, you know, over the vaccines, we were getting 90%, and those are the kind of headlines that the media likes to project, right? So, but I want to ask you this simple question about the use of this drug. Who gets it and at what stage? Because there are concerns that, you know, say you have a mild symptom, so you have no symptoms. Should you be taking this drug? Is there a point of no return in which this drug will be of very little value? And if so, are we likely to have a situation where this drug is dispensed too generously? And what are the dangers of that?
Again, interesting question. If you look at the efficacy of vaccines, right? If you look at, the first trials released by Moderna, released by Pfizer, they showed a trial of 93%, 94%, 95%, somewhere around there. Again, when that trial is done worldwide, other places where you get real world data, you don't get similar numbers. Now, we initially had Sinovac just showing just 50%. Right, and the same study done in Indonesia, in some of the Southeast Asia countries, showed more than 70% of efficacy. So it's always hard to generalize, right? And 50% of it's halving the risk of hospitalization and death. So that is a huge number, right? We should not see, oh, it's just 50%. Why is it not 100%, right? And another thing we must remember that I would like to see this as not a standalone treatment, right? I would like to see this not a standalone treatment because I would like to see this to be used as a holistic approach, right? Especially for those elderly, immunocompromised, those who are vaccinated but somehow not producing enough antibodies protection and they encounter breakthrough infections, right? We know that with the Delta.
Can I sort of follow up on Sharad's question? So the second part of his question talked about the dangers of perhaps overprescribing an antiviral drug, similar to, I'm just wondering whether there are concerns of viral resistance, similar to what we've seen with HIV drugs. You know, is that something that the medical community, that virologists are looking at, are concerned about?
So if you look at this pill, it targets the viral polymerase, which is important for replication, right? Normally, viral polymerases, right, are conserved in virus, in majority of viruses, especially RNA viruses, right? Same as in SARS-CoV-2. They undergo mutation, but not as rapidly as the viral glycosurface proteins. This example, spike, right? So while there are legitimate concerns that, you know, what happens if it's, mutates, right? But I think it's a far more safer bet to target compared to spike, right? So if we manage to eradicate the virus, why worry about it? We can leave that for pandemics in the future. But for now, I think we will be able to, use this without the concern of mutation.
Vinod, can I ask you another, maybe sort of broader question, which is, the way in which some of the vaccines have opened up an entirely new field or opportunities for treating disease around the world, not just the coronavirus and COVID-19. So does this monopiravir represent a technology, a medical technology that is also interesting in that it's a window onto all kinds of other possibilities?
No, definitely. Now, like I said before, drug repurposing is getting traction, right? We have off-the-shelf drugs which are FDA approved. We know the toxicity. We know that it is safe to be in use of in humans, right? Which can be redirected against this antivirus. That's a new field which is getting traction, right? For example, remdesivir and molnupiravir were not initially designed for SARS-CoV-2, but now it's efficient for SARS-CoV-2, right? So that is one field where, you know, it's gaining a lot of traction, rapid traction, right? Similar to new technologies introduced, you know, we have the mRNA technology, where by right they should have won a Nobel Prize this year for saving mankind, maybe next year, but yeah, definitely. There are a lot of windows of opportunities for this.
Okay. I want to come back to something you said a little bit earlier,
yeah, sure.
Vinod, about how molnupiravir is, there's an ease of use, right? So you talked about how easy it is to use, but I'm wondering whether there might be challenges in terms of distributing this drug or administrating antiviral drugs like this on a large scale, particularly when you think about getting the timing right and the dose right in countries that may not be testing, may not be able to diagnose at the point of this drug needing to be administered. Is that a challenge that we might be facing with molnupiravir?
I don't see it really as a challenge, because simply because we know that it's in the form of a pill, right? It's much more easier to store. It is much more easier to transport compared to transfused drugs which are in liquid form, right? And also vaccines where it needs specific temperature, right? So I believe that, you know, with this purchase, right, we can further our reach, especially in remote areas with fewer resources, right? Especially also, you know, one good thing is that we have resistance towards vaccines, even in our own country, by anti-vaxxers or communities who refuse to get vaccines, regardless of what. So I see this as a window of opportunity to use these drugs for them, right? For them.
So is testing very much part of the ecosystem that will make this drug more effective on a large scale? I mean, meaning that people need to be testing themselves and testing regularly in order to catch it early? I think that was a thrust of Melissa's question earlier.
Absolutely, yes, yes. Yes, so, you know, because we know that it's really efficient at early stages, right? Early stages of infection. So, yeah, it is really, you know, synergistic with testing done. So it should be done concurrently, especially to know at which stage of disease you are.
Okay. On a broader note, and I'm just wondering about what we've learned from the distribution of vaccines, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the inequity in terms of distribution. I'm wondering whether you are concerned that we might see the same type of inequality that we did with the vaccine nationalism. Also considering that this isn't a cheap drug, right? It's about 3,000 ringgit for a 5-day course, if I understand correctly.
Absolutely. Now, one good thing is that right from the mouth of our health minister, that he said that it's going to be free. So they purchased 150,000 doses, right? For initial distribution to people who need it, especially, like I said before, in immunocompromised elderly, those who have been vaccinated, you know. I see the price being a problem because, like you said before, it is somewhere around $700 per dose. Right, so that's big money. Merck is going to be, you know, making billions. But again, if you look at transfusion or monoclonal antibodies, right, it is more than $1,000, right? You know, if you look at cost of monoclonal antibody for a patient, it's somewhere around $2,000, and you know, the cost of remdesivir can cost up to $3,000. Sorry, not ringgit. Right now, one good thing is that, you know, I read from a latest press conference from Merck that saying that they are planning to set up tiered prices for molnupiravir. Right, so it means that it can cost less in certain countries, developing countries. And one good news is that it's licensing its production to 5 generic drug makers in India. So we are looking at really, really cheap, good, efficient drugs in the future.
Wonderful. Well.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully there is a silver lining and that we might see the end of this pandemic soon. Dr. Vinod, thank you so much for speaking with us today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for joining us on the show tonight.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Sharad. Take care.
Thank you.
That was our conversation with virologist Dr. Vinod Balasubramaniam from the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences of Monash University, Malaysia. That wraps up this episode of Consider This Before we leave you tonight, a reminder that you can get the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroalwani.com as well as the Astro Alwani app. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.